I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, as students all over Indiana head back to school, we're going to talk about the state of Hoosier education. We're going to talk about teacher shortages, about ISTEP scores, about the ways political tensions have affected schools, and myriad other educational issues. My guests as we talk all things Scholastic will be WFYI's own Eric Weddle, Chalkbeat Indiana Bureau Chief Scott Elliott, and Claire McNary, State Impact Indiana Education Reporter. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about getting back to school here in Indiana and just a few of the educational issues confronting the state. Before I get started, I'd like to thank my guest hosts while I was gone. It's good to be back, but I'd like to thank both Barbara and Jill for doing such a great job while I was away. My guests are folks who know the state of education in Indiana backwards, forwards, up and down. Starting with our own, WFYI's own Eric Weddle, Scott Elliott, who is with Chalkbeat Indiana. He's the bureau chief there. And Claire McInerney, we settled that debate, State Impact Indiana Education Reporter. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks.
Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. So let's talk a little bit about what seems to be the big news story that exploded, you know, just in the past few days, which is about the whole teacher shortage problem. First, and I think I'll start with Eric on this, give us some context as to, you know, where and how this got started and what's being done about it right now, and then we'll wade into the particulars of it.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, every year the big question is for school districts is if they are going to have enough staff and instructors in the school year. And I think this school year we've seen a lot of districts across the state, whether it's the urban districts, some of the rural districts have kind of come out and said, hey, we're having trouble finding teachers in the STEM fields mainly, and people have been being more difficult to find teaching jobs at teachers and for some principals as well. And the state data isn't up to date fully, but what's come out is that there's been about an 18.5% decrease in the number of first-year teachers getting a license between last year and 2009-10. So there's been a decline in the number of people who are actually going to the colleges in Indiana to get a teacher's degree.
Claire, why is this significant? Why should people care?
Well, this is something that we've seen on a nationwide level. In the last 20 years or so, this statistic has come out that most new teachers don't make it to the fifth year. And so it's something we've seen. But like Eric said, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math are big fields where it's tough to get teachers, mainly because if you have that expertise, you can find a higher paying job. Special ed's another way or another area where teachers are lacking. And so if schools are having trouble finding teachers, then they're starting the school year with substitute teachers, and there's not that consistency for kids. And like Eric said, the state data shows that there's less licenses being issued to new teachers, but we've also seen a decrease at the universities that have teaching programs in terms of students who are enrolling.
Scott, you know, this has already created a little bit of a debate about causes, and we haven't really alluded to that. We've just established, you know, what is happening now. Obviously, the Democrats, a lot of the folks who line up with teachers unions and others have said, you know, what do you expect? You've spent a lot of years demonizing teachers and blaming them for what's going on. Others are saying, no, this is part of a larger trend. So could you wade into that a little bit?
Yeah, I actually don't think we understand very well what's going on yet. I mean, for instance, factors that we're not talking about, which are certainly at play, are demographic-based factors. So what's going on right now in education, the teaching world, is that the baby boom generation, which was a very large generation of teachers, is exiting the profession via retirement. So literally, I would say over the last 5 or 6 years, almost every year, I get a panicky call from somebody saying, like, you know, everybody's quitting, everybody's retiring, everybody's flooding out of the profession. And when you look at the numbers, it just tracks to the trend of the age group that's going out and its large size. So I think that's one factor. The cohort of young people in college right now is considerably smaller than the recent cohorts are. So that's probably a factor. I think another factor, particularly in Indianapolis, is the good economy. I mean, our unemployment rate in Indianapolis is so low now, we're basically at full employment. So that and don't forget, the legislature just approved one of the bigger increases in state aid to school districts. So first of all, there's probably more school jobs. There's probably people who had difficulty finding jobs outside of education maybe aren't having as much difficulty because the employment situation in general is quite good. And then the demographic changes. So all of those are probably factors. Now, I think it certainly is a factor that that there's some discouraging information out there about what it's like to be a teacher today. I think that's certainly a factor, too. I just don't know how big a percentage to weigh on each one of those factors.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about schools and education here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I know we've got a lot of other issues, but I want to talk about this, just a teacher shortage, just a little bit more. Could part of the problem, and I want to take it out of kind of the political context, be that as an economy, as a culture, how whatever, we haven't appropriately valued teachers because, and I'm drawing on my mother's experience. She was a teacher, and she obviously was of a generation that said, you know, teachers, we often were able to secure them, in effect, on the cheap, because for a long time in this country's history, if you were a woman, that was the only profession you could go into where there weren't real, you know, barricades preventing you from entering the profession. And when other professions opened up for women, suddenly teaching stopped being quite as attractive to them, and you didn't have the best and the brightest women always going into teaching. Is there that kind of major cultural shift going on, and we're going to have to reevaluate the way we go out and attract and recruit teachers? Gave you the last word last time, Scott, so I'm going to give you the first one this time.
Indeed. I think that factors like that, there's certainly more demand and more opportunity for women graduates of college these days. In fact, there are more women in college today than there are men. So I think that that's another good example of sort of the unexplored impacts that are going on here. But I mean, I think that the end of your question is the right one, which is, you know, to recognize that it may be more difficult to compete for high quality people to be teachers. So what can the profession do about it? You know, this is a period where there's been questions raised about whether teacher pay is too high, too low, whether the sort of benefits you get from being a teacher are still worth it. I mean, I think that it will probably revitalize those debates.
Claire.
Sure. I do think what everybody blames the state of teachers or frustration that teachers deal with is on the politics. And this isn't just in Indiana. It's everywhere with increased accountability, student test scores being tied to teacher evaluations. I talked a few weeks ago with a researcher on the national level who looks at this. And I asked him that question point blank. Is this why teachers are leaving or not staying as long? And he said what Scott's kind of been bringing up is we can't for sure blame it on politics. We can't for sure blame it on these accountability things because there are so many other factors. It's happening at the same time this is occurring. So I think that's something important to remember is it isn't just the politics. That could be one factor among many of why we're seeing the profession change.
Eric, is this – I'll shift it slightly – is the fact that this is a problem on the radar – for the state's leaders, the governor and legislative leaders and the state DOE?
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, I think, I mean, I've heard the past week from so many teachers have sent me messages or called email after these reports came out. I think they really want lawmakers and the governor to kind of look at it and kind of, I think they want them to figure out why they think it's happening. I think people want a discussion. I think there's a lot of educators out there that want to discuss some of the reforms that have gone on, and they can pinpoint, which might be hard to do, but pinpoint if that's a cause for any of this, and if it is or is not, what we should do next. And I think the Superintendent Ritz is currently leading a commission right now with a bunch of teachers to kind of find ways to retain some top teachers in the state. So that's also ongoing kind of as a different issue.
Well,
go ahead.
I was going to say last week, Bob Boehning and Dennis Cruz, who are legislative leaders on the education committees, both said they're trying to advocate for a summer study committee after so much was written about this so-called shortage. So we could see it in the summer study committee as well.
This summer still?
Yes, yeah.
So
in August.
We could see
later
something.
In August.
So there is a sign that it is.
Yeah.
It's
on their radar.
And it is moving up on the priority list of things that need to be dealt with. We are talking about schools and education here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Or you can do what Rhonda has done and give us a call here at 866-476-3881. Rhonda, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
I'm from Sheridan, Indiana, and I'm a mother of a high schooler. So we've been looking at colleges and what degrees to pursue post-high school. And I have to say that education, although I think it's a tremendous field, is something that I'm not really pushing with my child because I feel, looking very objectively, she's going to come out of college with a debt, with a student debt. I don't think that teachers are paid well for the work that they do. And it's kind of sad that I have to kind of maybe guide her away a little bit from that. But I wish that there was a way that they would be compensated according to the work that's being done. And it just never seems to happen for them. And they just seem to become also more burdened, the social work component of their job as well. And that's just my comment. And it's probably part of why there may be not as many students pursuing a teaching degree.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Rhonda.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Claire, and I'm going to frame a question out of Rhonda's comment here. Is part of the conversation in any way, I mean, as a parent of children who are about ready to go into college myself, that whole idea, how do you sustain your lifestyle and all of that is an important one in factoring what the course of study your child will pursue. Is the idea of raising teacher pay or making some of the other economic incentives more attractive on the radar right now, too, or is that?
I've never met a policymaker who wouldn't love to pay teachers more. I think that's something everybody agrees on. This past session, they did pass a tax credit, a $100 tax credit for teachers for school supplies, which in the grand scale of things isn't a lot, but it is something that they are trying to do. I think the big problem in terms of funding schools and paying teachers more is there's so much support staff that also need, especially in urban areas, social workers and school counselors and things like that are vital for kids to succeed. So there's less money because it's just spread out over so many different positions because, like Rhonda said, it's not a teacher isn't just teaching anymore. Mm-hmm. They're counseling and talking to kids and trying to help them with other life issues that have nothing to do with education because it's for the child's well-being. So I think we're seeing a lot of that. That's a issue and trend, I think, that isn't just specific to Indiana or our schools. It's everywhere in America. That's how our system works in terms of education and how we pay them they're not doctors and lawyers, even though they're doing tremendous work, like she said.
Well, and we already, as a state government, education accounts for more than half of the state's budget. So passing those costs along, it's pretty obvious where that money would come from. Is that the sort of counterbalancing weight that keeps people from saying, oh, yeah, we will pay teachers more, Scott?
Well, always. I was just talking to some students at the University of Indianapolis about school funding, and, I said the simple problem is there's never enough money. I mean, there's so much more we can do always in education, so you will never have the money you need to compensate everybody the way that they should be and to cover all the costs that we need to cover. However, I wouldn't discourage folks from going into education. I mean, you know, this is still the great thing about the profession is that it's it can be very rewarding. And frankly, you make an impact on the world in the way that a lot of other people just can't make through their work.
Claire, did you have a point?
Yeah, I mean, and not to I'm going to plug a project I just started, but over the next year, I'm following three first-year teachers because I kind of wanted to see what it's like from the ground level. And like Scott said, I spent the summer with these these ex-students who are now teachers, and they are having their first days of school this week, and they are so excited, and they understand, I think, objectively what their challenges will be, what their time commitments will be, and it is really going to be rewarding for them, I think.
We are talking about schools in Indiana here on No Limits. My guests are Eric Weddle of our own WFYI, Scott Elliott with Chalkbeat Indiana, and Claire McInerney, who is with State Impact. She's the Indiana Education Reporter. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
It's 119, and you're listening to No Limits on 90.1, made possible by your membership and by the Indiana State Fair, celebrating the Year of the Farmer, August 7th through the 23rd, with 17 days of entertainment, exhibits, and food spread out over 250 acres. Tickets online at indianastatefair.com. And by Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, hosting Pedals, Pros, and Places, a self-guided bike tour of community green spaces in downtown Indy neighborhoods along bike lanes and greenways on August 15th. More information at kibi.org. Your support makes a difference all year round. Become a monthly supporter of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio by becoming a sustaining member at wfyi.org/give. And thank you. You can send questions to No Limits via social media. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. We're on Twitter at WFYI.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about schools and education here in Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are WFYI's own Eric Weddle, Scott Elliott, who is the Indiana Bureau Chief for Chalkbeat Indiana, and Claire McInerney, who is State Impact Indiana Education Reporter. Well, before the break, we were talking about the teacher shortage and what might account for that. Probably, I want to give you a chance. Claire said she's got a project that she wanted to plug, and we ought to give more time because that is a worthwhile initiative. Could you talk a little bit about what you're doing? And Eric, I know you've got something in the works too. Scott does as well, but he's not as comfortable talking about it at this moment. So we'll start with Claire.
My project called The First Year is following three recent graduates of IU School of Education through the first year of their job as teachers. And they're in an urban, suburban, and rural setting. So they all will face different and similar challenges throughout the year. I have no idea where it's going to go, but I'm in contact with them every week and we chat. And, you know, they're going through their first days of school right now. But this summer I spent time with them while they set up their classrooms and went out and bought their supplies and kind of what they were expecting. But it's been really inspiring as someone who spends, you know, my professional life focused on education to follow three people just through all of the ups and downs. And right now they're in that phase where they are so excited to start their jobs and meet the kids and meet the families and things like that. And I'm interested to see how it goes throughout the year, you know, whether assessment time takes a different toll on them or, you know, how the school does, how they interact with their districts. And they're all in very different situations. But they're all very excited and very prepared that it's been inspiring despite everything that we were just talking about for the first part of this show. There's a lot of challenges teachers face, but a lot of them that do choose to pursue it are there for the right reasons. And that's what I'm seeing with these three teachers.
Eric.
Yeah, for this year, I'm going to be over at the Arlington High School, IPS school over on the northeast side. And in 2011-12, the state took over the school because it had a 6 consecutive Fs. And Tinley Charter School was hired to run that, IPS school. And they did for 3 years, and they came up with some financial problems. And IPS got the school back. So for the first time in 3 years, it's back to IPS. So I'm going to be there embedded at the school to kind of just see how that transition works, you know, over the next year. And I've been there the past few days. And kind of like Claire said, despite all the things we're talking about, the focus there right now is with the kids and with the teachers trying to improve that school and improve all what's going on there. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting stories to come out of that.
We've gotten a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Says wants the panel, I presume that's the three of you, to point out that teachers who teach for 10 years or more are forgiven on their student loans, that is an incentive of sorts. Everybody's sort of looking elsewhere. Scott, you're the one who's looking the least befuddled by this.
No, I actually don't know that rule. I'm sorry. I'm just not familiar with it.
I've never heard of that either.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, we will check that out at
journalism.
Some point.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, right.
We are talking about schools and education here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Maggie, welcome to the program.
Yes, I would just like to say I'm not a teacher myself, but I know some young teachers, and so it is particularly alarming to me when I hear a young teacher who's just been out of college for a couple of years talk about her frustration with teaching. And one of the things she's mentioned is the political climate. Teachers are made to feel incompetent, like the government of Indiana knows better what to do in the classroom than she as a teacher does. And this is a young lady who is very passionate about helping the students, putting in the extra time for those who need remediation, et cetera. So it's really sad to hear that kind of a young teacher is thinking of leaving the profession so soon. Another concern that I have heard from other young teachers is problems with administrators. That can be principals, that can be superintendents, where they're not good organizers, not the kind of people that are very competent in their own job, and that just makes it more frustrating for teachers to deal with. And the third thing that I hear is unruly kids. Kids who aren't taught basic politeness and respect at home, and as a result, the teachers need to deal with that in the classroom. So I think there are a myriad of things that need to be addressed to address the problem with the teacher shortage. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the comments, questions, observations, Maggie. Well, that touches on a lot of issues here that we're talking about here. Can we address the political climate? I mean, the fires surrounding education reform, the education battles seem to have tamped down a little bit at the moment. You know, we're not having shouting matches at ed board meetings at the moment or anything like that, or people marching out or lawsuits being filed back and forth. You know, but what effect has that had on how schools perform here in the state? Eric, I'm going to start with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of teachers, you know, who just don't care about what happens to the state board. That's noise to them. But I think what you look at is you have the state's academic standards have changed 3 times in 5 years. And I think those are the type of changes that really impact the schools. And I think that's what kind of makes teachers feel like lawmakers are maybe taking things into their own hands when they're kind of forced at the last minute to change what they're doing, since the previous academic standards were approved last summer, 2 months before school, or I think 1 month before school began. So I think those are the kind of problems in politics that they really feel at the school level.
Go ahead, Scott.
Changes in testing also, which came along with that. I think that feeling is real. I mean, I think that the election of Glenda Ritz is probably the best example of teacher frustration being borne out in an electoral way. I really don't think that she would have defeated Tony Bennett, given the sort of financial mismatch of that race, if not for a lot of energy, which I think started with teacher frustration and the feeling that there was some level of disrespect toward them. On the other hand, I would answer some of the concerns that she's hearing by saying, you know, is this a kind of a difficult time to be a teacher? Yeah, but it's also a fairly exciting time to be in education. There's a lot of parallels to journalism where we all live. But, you know, among the really all of us sitting here, all four of us are in new journalism organizations in one way or another. Well, that's sort of coming to education, too. Everyone's not necessarily going to work at a public school district or in a totally traditional public school. I was speaking recently at the University of Indianapolis, where they have a principal MBA program. So they teach principals how to manage with business skills as well as academic skills, so they can run their own schools, whether they're going to be charter schools or partnership schools within a school district, or simply school district run innovation schools. I think that there's a lot of opportunity for that really didn't exist in public education in the past, for people to have these interesting experimental pathways and try things that just hadn't been done before.
I feel like I got to ask this question. You know, I would think if you guys are closer observers of this than I am, that there has to be some frustration mounting on all sides of the question. Because if you think about it, there is a broad consensus that we need to have better schools, better educational outcomes. But many of the approaches that have been taken, charters, vouchers, all of that, really haven't moved the dial anywhere near as much as anyone would indicate. So, you know, there's frustration on the folks who felt like they were indicted on the public education side of the equation. There has to be frustration with the folks who aren't, you know, financially invested in some of these other outcomes, that, okay, what we thought was going to be the magic bullet didn't work. What now? Claire, you're nodding your head, so I'm going to you.
From my observations, like Eric and Scott talked about in terms of context, the last 5 years in Indiana has been rapid change from everything from standards, testing, school choice, and we haven't given anything enough time to breathe. And I think that's what we've seen at the political level. We adopt the Common Core, we abandon it soon after, and we immediately replace it. We install a new school choice program and it's getting tweaked every single year. And I think it's the timing of making these policy changes that is making teachers feel like they're bombarded and parents and confused about their choices, and politicians feel like they have to catch up. And I think we see that during the session is the politicians are scrambling to clean up the messes. And instead of saying, let's see how this works, it might not be perfect the first few years, but let's see how it goes, they immediately try to address it. And that's, at least from my reporting that I've noticed, where frustrations come is then all these policy changes are made up top quickly, and then teachers and administrators have to implement them. And maybe even teachers feel frustrated because their administrators are trying to put something into place quickly, and then it falls to the teachers. And I think this rapid domino effect is what's causing a lot of the frustrations.
Is there a point, though, that the, I guess where I'm going with the politics of this, in a sane or perfect world, you know, everyone would
with
sort
politics?
Of
politics?
I know. Well, I can only get in trouble by commenting further on that. But in a sane or a perfect world, what you'd say is, okay, we all kind of agree on an objective here and that we want students better educated. We've tried this, you know, pragmatically, and it might not have worked. We've tried, you know, these other approaches that might not have worked. Time to go back to the drawing board and see if there's a different way we can do this. Is there any, you know, sort of that spirit involved in the discussion right now, or are we still going to keep arguing about vouchers and charters and all of those things for the next 10 or 15 years? Eric, I'll throw it to you.
I think IPS is going to be a big part of that picture, because right now IPS is kind of expanding their involvement with charter schools. You know, they've now signed contracts with charter schools. So I think maybe that conversation could change locally as people see the different integrations. But I mean, I know a lot of people still, you know, who are on either side of vouchers and charters, and I don't see them changing anytime
soon. They're not putting their guns down anymore.
No, I mean, especially, yeah. I think, you know, if it's State House, too, and right now, you know, whether it's lawmakers or the governor and superintendent, I feel like right now, and you guys may think differently, but it seems like everyone is in their position and no one's really going to give yet.
Scott.
Although I would say there's an interesting other side of this story. So, well, certainly Indiana is known for the sort of heat of its political battle over education. I mean, the other thing it's sort of known for outside of the state is being an innovative place. So, I mean, like some of the ideas that we've started here in Indiana are people want to copy other places. For instance, in Cincinnati, they're trying to create an organization that's like the Mind Trust to try to seed innovation. The Excel Center, a charter school idea here, is now being adopted in other cities and other states. So, like, while this all this like angry fighting is going on at the high level, I actually think down in the weeds, this is one of the few places where innovation is not just a buzzword, where there actually are people trying to work together in various ways, often across those ideological lines, to try to actually solve problems. That it makes us interesting.
I should say before we get any further that we have gotten a couple of answers in regard to the whole student loan forgiveness thing. It's good to have it. We have a smart audience, people who know things listen to this program. And I should say, if you want to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Email from a listener named Michael who says, in the past, National Defense Education Act loans were discounted 10% per year for up to 50% if you taught in an urban high school area, high needs area. And then email from Craig, slightly different answer, says, regarding the last comment on teacher student loan debt being forgiven, that's in reference to the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program for federal loans. It's for professionals working in education and not-for-profits. Outstanding student loan debt is forgiven after 10 years of work. So apparently there are such programs in place, and it would be worth checking out. My thanks to Michael and Craig for getting back with us. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about schools, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind, Stephanie?
So just to give a little bit of background on myself, so I have taught for 5.5 years, and I actually recently just left the education field so I could get my graduate degree in speech pathology. And I know for me, one of the biggest reasons why I left education was the lack of focus on the students themselves. I felt so much pressure was on us as the teachers to get all this data and to show the growth in the students that we just forgot basic student needs. I taught for IPS for 2.5 years. Most of the time I saw, you know, students having a lot of needs that weren't being addressed because we were focusing so much on the assessment. And I feel like until we get to this point of not just focusing on data and even just a teacher shortage, the point is to focus on the kids.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Stephanie.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. So, Scott, I'm going to throw that one to you first. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a sense that that at times, in part because there is so much money involved and all of that, and so many of the state's priorities are tied to schools, and there's, let's face it, there are political futures now that are tied to this in ways. I mean, I remember writing a column at one point at sort of the high point and sort of facetiously saying that if you were a parent in this state, you should name your child either Glenda or Tony so that they will, you know, that politicians will either pay attention to you in some fashion or another, pay attention to the child. Are students often overlooked in all of this infighting?
I think that that's a perfectly legitimate complaint. I mean, I think that one of the problems is that kids bring an awful lot of needs to school, particularly if you're in an IPS or any sort of high need situation. You know, that so I was just talking to an expert today who was saying, I think it's by 2025, they're expecting 30% of students to be special ed, so to be on an IEP, on an individual education plan. So that, I mean, like one student on an individual education plan requires a ton of effort. Like you have to, you're often bringing in outside expertise to help them with their, whether it's a learning disability or physical disability or whatever their challenge might be. Sometimes it's social emotional problems. Sometimes it's literally like a social issue, like poverty-based problem. So trying to solve each student's various barriers to learning is always complicated, and it's just gotten more so, and it will continue to get more complicated over time. So that's a tricky challenge, and it's also an area where a greater degree of sort of partnership and coordination in the public sector, even beyond the schools, would be helpful.
Eric and Claire, how much of this is also a problem that you know, by and large, students don't vote? They aren't invested in the process. So I'll start with Claire or Eric, whichever one of you would like to begin.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think some students just don't know what's going on in this whole sphere that we're focused on. You know, they're not sure why some of these things are being handed to them. They're not sure why they need to pass this test, really. You know, or why it's important. And today I was at Arlington, and this teacher actually told the students, you know, basically said, "My pay and my job is on the line based on what you guys do, just to be, you know, transparent. And this is how it works. And I want you to come into class and listen. And if you listen and do your job, my job will get done too." But that's above them. That cloud's hanging over me, and I want you to know about it.
Claire, you got about 5 seconds.
I was just going to say, I think parents and teachers do need to realize what their pressures they're putting on, because I've heard of parents who make the I-step and things a big deal, and it starts early then, kids knowing what they have to do to perform well.
We are talking about schools in Indiana here on No Limits. My guests are Eric Weddle of WFYI, Scott Elliott, who is Chalkbeat Indiana's bureau chief, and Claire McInerney, who is State Impact Indiana Education Reporter. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us.
I'm Sam.
I'm Allie.
I'm Katie.
And we're the Whipstitch Sallies.
Check out our small studio session,
WFYI's first digital-only program,
at wfyi.org/smallstudio.
It's 1:39, and you're listening to No Limits on 90.1, made possible by your membership. And by Apparatus, announcing Whiteboard Wednesday, an opportunity to tackle business challenges with an apparatus technologist. More at apparatus.net/Whiteboard Wednesday. And by Indy 11 Professional Soccer, presenting Faith and Family Night, Saturday, August 8th at IUPUI's Carroll Stadium, with post-game testimonies by Corey Miller and Judson McKinney. More information at faith.indy11.com. Now back to John Kroll and No Limits on 90.1.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about schools in Indiana. My guests are Eric Weddle of WFYI, Scott Elliott, who is the Indiana Bureau Chief for Chalkbeat, and Claire McInerney, who is State Impact Indiana Education Reporter. And I should say that this program is part of American Graduate, our continuing conversation about the importance of education and about putting people, young people, on the path to graduation and success in life. It is a partnership of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, this station, and many other interested partners in achieving that worthwhile goal. Well, we've talked an awful lot about sort of the state of teacher morale and the teacher shortage problem. We probably ought to talk about the larger political picture, the fact that we have the state superintendent of public instruction running for governor now, which is not I've been observing politics in Indiana for a long time. That's never happened before. And part of her stated reason for doing so is saying, okay, I can't really influence education policy from where I am, so I have no choice but to run for governor. She's had a little bit of a rocky start getting out of the gate, though. I have a gift for understatement. Scott.
Yeah, I think what I would like to know right now is whether this is going to last with Glenda running for governor. So what we've seen since she announced in early June is she didn't have the most enthusiastic response, even in her sort of announcement press conference was pretty small. There wasn't even a single Glenda, or maybe one Glenda Ritz for governor sign that I remember. So that didn't kind of, I don't know, public event there wasn't the greatest kickoff. Since then, you know, we haven't heard a whole lot from her campaign. That when we do hear about it, it's because of mistakes that they've made in their treasury, and they may have violated some state laws in terms of accepting contributions at times when they were limited and not allowed to accept them. So, and frankly, she's not raising very much money. And the general sort of feeling, I think, in the body politic is that the momentum here is toward John Gregg. I saw recently, I think yesterday in the paper, there was a question raised about whether Karen Talion might shift toward running for attorney general. That would take one of the three Democrats out of the race and reduce it to Gregg and Ritz. So, like, is this going to last? I mean, is this going to be something? When she first announced in June, I thought, like, wow, we might have a whole year until next May of, like, her running for governor against, you know, other Democrats and against the governor. But, you know, if she doesn't have any money and she can't get any momentum and everybody sort of coalesces around Gregg, that might not last. So that's what I'm watching for.
What I find interesting about it, though, is she still seems to draw a lot of focus from Republicans, which I would think if you're John Gregg right now, you're thinking, oh, please stay in the race. You know, All of the attention and the criticism that otherwise might be directed at me is going your way right now. Even though, you know, as you say, most of the evidence would suggest, I mean, she's raised $30,000 and both John Gregg and Mike Pence raised more than $1 million in the first period. And the governor had a significant war chest even before that. Why does she attract that kind of attention from Republicans? What is it about her that gets under their skin so much, Claire?
Well, ever since she came into her role as state superintendent, it's very much been a Glenda Ritz versus Mike Pence. She was one of the highest-ranking elected Democratic officials in the state. And like Scott mentioned earlier, she was elected to her state superintendent position solely almost on grassroots efforts of using Facebook, using social media, people coming out of the woodwork. The statistic has been out there. She got more votes in that election than Mike Pence. People came out to vote for her. And so she's kind of been this, you know, leader for Democrats in the state who want to see change. But we haven't heard much from her since she announced. We know where she stands on education issues, but everything else, it's been pretty quiet. You know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But right now, even before the announcement, at the very end of the session, I know there was a press conference that a few of us were at and where she mentioned that she might run. And it seemed very knee-jerk to what had happened during the session. All of the education bills that came out, specifically, she pointed to the ones about changing the state board, removing the state superintendent as the chair. You know, she talked about maybe I'll run for governor because of these education issues. And so that's been one of the biggest criticisms of her being in the race is she might not have deep platform opinions about things other than education at this point.
Eric, you want to add something?
Well, I would just say what I'm interested now is seeing if the Republicans will find someone to run against her for the superintendent job and who that would be and how quickly that person will come out. Because it seems if that person is named soon, they're going to have, until the primary happens to kind of run their own campaign and get their platform out there about how the Republicans would want to run the superintendent job.
Gotten an email from a listener named Lloyd, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Lloyd says, teachers have been demonized since the Reagan administration. He says in parentheses, remember that setup from years ago, A Nation at Risk? For the same reason postal workers are currently being demonized, union busting. The current strategy is to make older teachers, generally the reliable union supporters and members, miserable enough to retire. It happened to me. The students weren't the problem, the administration wasn't the problem, and the pay wasn't the problem. I retired because of the feckless nonsense politics and paperwork. Year after year of something else new and crazy and often a waste of precious time. I refuse to jump through hoops like a trained monkey. We do live and work in a state in which there have been battles, not just in the education arena, over labor unions and really labor support in the state. How much of that has played into the conflict here? And then the larger question, the one I want to get on the back end of this, if we're hearing a refrain from a lot of these teachers and all of these folks, it is that they feel like they're not being treated with any any kind of dignity or respect? And what, if anything, is being done to address that concern? Eric, I'm going to start with you. You know, how much of this is just about trying to break the teachers' union?
I mean, I think, you know, the issue of accountability is one that I think some members of the union don't appreciate. I think that's what comes down to a lot of the excerpt that person mentioned, lots of paperwork. You know, I think, unfortunately, they don't want that. I think accountability is something that's here to stay here in the state, and that comes with a lot of, you know, a lot of issues. As for breaking the teachers' union, I'm not really, you know, I don't know what to really say about that. If, like, that's the reason for some of these reforms happening in Indiana. I mean, I know there is a lot of opposition amongst, you know, some lawmakers for the Indiana State Teachers Association, you know, in the past few years with the issues they've had. But I'm not really sure I'm going to weigh into that. I don't know if Scott knows a little bit better grasp.
And I'll focus. The complaint often you hear from public educators and particularly ISTA members is, okay, fine. We're fine with accountability as long as it's applied across the board, that they feel that there are exemptions for some of these new innovations and that they're being judged by a different standard than anybody else is. You know, is there truth to that, or, you know, and if so, what can be done about it, or is anything being done about it?
Well, I think what was reflected in his question is there is undoubtedly a strong connection between the anti-labor push and some folks in the school reform movement, for school reform, for lack of a better term, because it's that's a broad term. This is frustrating to folks who are involved in school reform who really are not in the in the union wars. They often are frustrated by being identified as he described, as this movement being all about busting unions. I don't think it's all about busting unions, but I do think that there is a strong element within the push for change in education that believes that labor contracts are a barrier to progress, and so they work hand in hand with those efforts. But I would point out that a lot of the most sort of anti-union legislative efforts fail. I mean, just this last time, there was an effort that was going to require every single union in the state to recertify its every teachers union would have to recertify, have a new vote as to whether they wanted to keep their union. That never made it out of committee. I mean, the teachers unions are actually quite effective in lobbying against the most aggressive efforts to change union laws. So I don't think that they're having broad success.
Claire, I'm going to shift it to that second larger question, which is the one, you know, the motif that's running through all of this is, you know, teachers aren't being treated with anything resembling respect. They want a little bit of dignity restored to the profession. Is there any hope that that's going to happen?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of the there's been a trickle-down effect since No Child Left Behind was first enacted. And I think that's where a lot of this accountability comes from, is from the very, very top. We're trying to hold kids accountable to certain standards. And the federal government has recognized over years that maybe the original plan was not the correct one, because now we have all these waivers that exempt mm-hmm. states from the specific requirements of the law. And then now Congress is looking at rewriting No Child Left Behind. And that's, you know,
and that will make it better, of course.
Well, yeah. But I mean, I think they're recognizing that the standard they set 10, whatever it was, over a decade ago isn't, you know, kids aren't going to get 100% proficient, because we're learning that so much more goes into education than just passing a test. It's so many social issues and things outside the classroom. So, I mean, I don't know. That's my answer. I don't know if it'll get better, but I think everybody is starting to recognize that teachers don't feel respected or feel overworked.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Joe that sort of speaks to that point about the outside factors. He says, please talk about the effects childhood poverty have on teaching. Nationally and in Indiana, child poverty rates are at all-time highs. So I'll throw that one to Scott first.
Sure. No question. These are inextricably linked problems. The shift over the last few decades has been to put more burden on the school to try to deal with broader poverty issues, as many of the sort of poverty programs outside of schools have been scaled back and cut back, and we've spent less on those sort of things. And that has absolutely been a challenge for schools. there's a kind of tricky two sides of the coin on poverty. Like, it's very frustrating, I think, to teachers who work in high poverty zones when people suggest that don't use poverty as an excuse. You know, you have to get the kids to learn anyway. And they're like, yeah, but poverty is like a real big problem, right? You can't just say like, it doesn't matter. It does matter. On the other hand, sometimes folks do use it as an excuse. I mean, there are many urban schools that perform very well, where the students test well and they show up at their middle schools and high schools quite well prepared. So if it can happen in, let's just take IPS. If it can happen in school 79 and in school 90, like, why can't it happen in every high poverty neighborhood? Those are very typical neighborhood schools that are very high performers because they're well run. And the educators have really good strategies and they use them very effectively. So that's sort of like the two sides of the coin. We have to acknowledge and be realistic about the fact that that has a huge impact. And then we also have to recognize that there are ways to still educate the student in the time that you have them in the classroom outside of their poverty situation and do that effectively.
How much of that, Scott, is, the original argument for charter schools was that these were going to be, in effect, laboratories, places where we were going to try to deal with questions like, okay, how do we address childhood poverty? And we're going to, experiment, find something that works, and then take it out to the larger school system. Mm-hmm. The argument for charters then changed. This is going to be a place where we're going to offer choices, basically, mm-hmm. to parents and students, and it's going to be less about trying to figure out approaches that might have a broader application than just figuring out this, giving people a different kind of educational experience. You know, is there any place where we are looking at solving this at a global level, saying, okay, childhood poverty is a problem all across the country.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do about it?
Well, I mean, I think that both the charter and traditional public sectors right here in Indianapolis, you see some interesting things being tried. Expert argued to me today, for instance, that Washington Township might not be doing its district-wide international baccalaureate program. So every single school in Washington Township is now using this very highly respected international baccalaureate curriculum, right? Mm-hmm. Why are they doing that? In part due to the competition of schools, charter schools, and other kind of school choice options, right? That was the argument from the expert I was talking to. And that's not even a charter school or even a magnet school in the district. But if you just look at IPS, a school where I've spent some time lately is School 93. It's one of now three Project Restore schools. So Project Restore was an idea that was born at School 99 in IPS. It was sort of incubated by a couple of teachers. Now it's running three different schools, having a lot of success. So I actually think that the atmosphere of innovation is there. It's maybe not as widespread as we would like.
Eric, talk to me a little bit about the atmosphere at Arlington. I mean, that's sort of now, it's a school that had failed, had been handed off to, in effect, a rescue operation. It sounds like the rescue failed
right.
at some level, too. What does that do to the people who work there, and what does that do to the students who have to go to school there?
Well, for the people that work there, I mean, there are, the whole entire staff is new. There's no one from the previous administration from the the charter school company there. But I will say, I mean, everyone I met everyone there so far. There's a huge excitement there. I mean, they really think that they are going to rebirth this school. They don't care about the past. They don't care about what happened with IPS or Tinley previously. And everyone there are very focused on Principal Stan Law, who came from Shortridge, and he brought a lot of staff with him. And among them, there's a lot of excitement. I've spoken to students over the summer from Tinley, when Tinley had it, and they're nervous to kind of see how the culture will be. I've only been there 2 days since school started, only 2 days ago, and I think people are trying to figure it out right now. I mean, it's a large school. It's 7 to 12 grade. I think there'll probably be more than 600 students enrolled officially. Don't quote me on that yet, but I think those numbers,
I don't have to because you just threw it out over the air.
I think there's going to be a lot of excitement there. The community and the alumni are huge right now at that school. There's a lot of people there who want to help out.
Claire, in just a few seconds, your three first-year teachers, are they excited, they terrified, or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between. I'm having them give me audio diaries of their first day of school. And I got the first one yesterday, and he talks about how excited he was, like his lessons went great, you know, things like that. And then he goes, getting him to lunch was so hard. I didn't think about the logistics of being a teacher. And so I'm sure we'll see those things get better as the year goes on. But the three teachers I picked are so excited. They have great support systems. And, you know, they're willing to go the extra mile to make sure that their students do well for the students and not just the teachers. So I think it'll be a lesson for them, for us, for the legislature, who hopefully listens to my stories, to hear what it's like to be a new teacher and the things that they have to deal with.
Well, I think that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests. We've been talking about schools here in Indiana. Eric Weddle of our own WFYI, Scott Elliott, who is Chalkbeat Indiana Bureau Chief, and Claire McInerney, who is State Impact Indiana Education Reporter. I'd like to thank all of you. I've enjoyed talking with you. As always, I guess Scott and Eric I talk more often. Claire I just met. And I'd like to also thank our listeners for some great questions and comments. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.